truth seekers. Yeah, it is I, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Broadcasting live from sunny Los Angeles, beautiful sunny downtown Burbank in the K-Talk AM 1150 studio, sitting in for Mike Malloy tonight only, one night only, but I will make it worth your while. Oh man, Mike is up in San Francisco tonight. Doing an event with our affiliate, Green 960, up there. So he will be back tomorrow broadcasting from Sam Clam's Disco on Thursday and Friday, as I understand it. So tonight, you're stuck with me, but as I say, I will make it worth your while. Keeping an eye on you truth seekers over at DU, over at bradblog.com, where we've got a live chat room set up tonight. Agent 99 will be your lovely hostess throughout the evening. So we want you to jump into the conversation. We also want you to call in if you want. If you can get in, we're going to have a lot ahead. Don't use Mike Malloy's regular phone number. Use our special phone number, the Brad Alone number. That's 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. Now is the moment to get in. If you want to get in a question for our first guest, who's going to be joining us momentarily, we've got a spook coming up here in a second. Phil Giraldi, former CIA officer, author of the cover story on Sybelle Edmonds, the interview that is rocking the world across the media. No, apparently not. But it is rocking American conservative magazine media. It is rocking bradblog.com. We're going to ask Phil Giraldi why the hell the story of Sybelle Edmonds isn't rocking anywhere else, at least in the U.S. media. It seems to work its way around the Turkish media, the Indian media, the Armenian media, the Israeli media. When it comes to the U.S., oh, I guess bribery, blackmail, espionage, stolen nuclear secrets aren't that big of a deal to the U.S. media. They got, So You Think You Can Dance, or whatever the hell that's called. Dancing with Tom DeLay. Much, much more important. We're going to talk to Phil Giraldi about this exploding, as far as I'm concerned. I don't care what anybody says, this exploding Sybelle Edmonds story. I'll catch you up to date on that in a second, if you are new to this story. We're also going to be speaking with Lorraine Minniti, on the acorn smears and nonsense that have been just covering our media, not just the wingnut media, but the legitimate media everywhere except for, by the way, Rachel Maddow's show, who's done a terrific series over the last 3 or 4 days, finally kicking back at the nonsense, at the stuff. You know, we've been covering this at BradBlog for years, trying to let people know that this is a witch hunt, this is a setup, this is a smear, this is all about politics. It has nothing to do with what the certainly the right-wing media, but even the non-right-wing media have pretended it has something to do with. No, it's about power. We're going to be talking about that tonight. We're going to be talking about this guy, what's his name, Limbaugh something, Rusty Limbaugh. Yeah, you know him. He's the guy who comes into your house and cars every day in 600 markets and lies to you and underscores why the hell we can't get anything done in this country, why we can't have media reform, why we can't have health care reform, all the things that we need. It's not just Russia's fault. No, it's the media. And who's not reforming the media? That would be the Democrats. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk to Emily Levy about a new campaign out here in California, but it's going to apply to the rest of the country. It's called DeboldReturnOurMoney.com. Yes, Debold, you put out machines that you knew were in violation of federal voting system standards. You made us vote on them anyway, and as far as I'm concerned, you owe California $100 million. You owe the rest of the country a lot of money, too. We're going to get it back. We're also going to speak with Project Censored co-authors, co-editors, Peter Phillips and Mickey Huff, because today is the day of the release of the new Censored 2010 book, the top 25 most censored stories over the past year. And they're going to be joining us to talk about what they are. Among them is, I'm proud to say, bradblog.com. We are a Project Censored Award winner this year. I also contributed a chapter to that book. Yes, everything that we talk about tonight is underscored by one thing: media failure. Corporate media failure. I'll tell you, I don't get a lot of opportunities to sit behind this microphone. I'm always delighted when Mike Malloy lets me sit in, or anybody else does. I take these 3 hours on the public airwaves damned seriously. Doesn't mean we can't have fun. Doesn't mean I hope you don't laugh a little bit along the way. I suspect you might. But I think this this airtime on these public airwaves is damned important. And I think we have auctioned it off to the highest bidder. Corporations now control our airwaves, not the people anymore. You know, I've been watching the Ken Burns documentary this week on PBS, Our National Parks, America's Best Idea, he argues. I would argue that our public airwaves, limited as they are not particularly different from Yellowstone. There's only one Yellowstone. Yosemite. There's only one Yosemite. Well, only one Grand Canyon. Only one Glacier National Park. That's why we've set them aside, to protect them. The government has protected them from commercial interests, commercial bidders. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Well, as the show goes on, I would suggest that our public airwaves, which we've also recognized are owned by the people, but we've decided not to protect them. We've given them away to the highest bidder, which means we hear nothing but lie after lie after lie, supporting the essentially the, you know, what the corporations want you to hear. I'm sorry to say it. And I'll give you a good example of that in the next hour. Another good example of that comes to, as far as I'm concerned, this Sybelle Edmonds story. In July of this year, I sat in for Mike. I had Sybelle Edmonds on. She was at the time not allowed to talk at all about what she heard as a counterintelligence translator in the FBI, some extraordinary things that she heard. She wasn't able to talk about it because she had been slapped with a gag order by the Bush administration, who had twice invoked the state secrets privilege on her, the so-called state secrets privilege, to keep her from talking about what she heard as a translator in the FBI. And just what was it that they were so worried about that they had to use this draconian effort to shut her up? Well, for years, information has been slipping out about it, about what it is that she wanted to talk about. And in July, in any case, she was on this very show, on these very airwaves, and she had mentioned something about certain U.S. interests being very intimate. That's a quote, intimate with the Mujahideen and the bin Ladens, and actually Osama bin Laden, right up until September 11. Now, she might have said Al-Qaeda, but she has noted that in the FBI, at least, they were never referred to as Al-Qaeda up until September 11. They were referred to as the Mujahideen. That was July. A couple weeks later, in August, suddenly she was called in to give a deposition under oath in an Ohio Elections Commission case, completely sort of out of the blue. And at the time, she was called in to be asked about the case where Jean Schmidt, the congresswoman from Ohio, had filed a false statements claim against David Krikorian, who ran against her in 2010. Krikorian had said that Schmidt took blood money from the Turks because she had taken something like $30,000, the most money of all of the folks running in Congress in 2008, from Turkish interests, Krikorian had alleged. She filed a complaint, and Krikorian subpoenaed Sybelle Edmonds to come in and talk about how this works and how Turkish money from these Turkish lobby groups goes to candidates, and how that gets the candidates to do pretty much what they want in Congress. And she told the Justice Department that she was planning on answering this lawful deposition. this lawful subpoena, and she did. And, she started talking. She had warned the DOJ, by the way, hey, if you want to shut me up, you can invoke the state secrets privilege again. The Obama administration, to their credit, did not invoke state secrets privilege. Instead, they let her speak. That entire deposition is transcribed, is on video. You can watch it on bradblog.com. It's explosive. She names names. She named Denny Hastert. She named Dan Burton. She named Roy Blunt, Stephen Solars, Tom Lantos, folks in Congress who she said were taking bribes, being blackmailed by the Turks. You would think this would be big news. An FBI translator naming names. She named Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, Mark Grossman, the third highest in the Bush State Department, as being involved in this cabal that traded away military secrets, nuclear secrets, to the black market. Seemed like big news to me. Apparently not to the U.S. media, because nobody picked up the story. In early September, I, your humble host, Brad Friedman, returned to the Mike Malloy Show. I played an hour of that deposition, clips from the deposition. It was like a 3-4 hour deposition. It was startling. Played it on the airwaves for the first time. Still, no interest. Until last week, when American conservative magazine, Pat Buchanan's magazine, of all places, decided to pick up the story, ran a cover story on Sybil Edmonds. Her lovely face graces that cover. The CIA, the former CIA operative who conducted that interview, no holds barred, and she told the whole story, really, for the first time. That CIA, former CIA officer, Phil Giraldi, joins us next. And for the entire hour, your calls are ahead, 877-520-1150, to talk to Phil Giraldi about Sybil Edmonds. You'll hear it nowhere else but here on the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Brad, in for Mike. Program Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. We are talking this hour and all 3 hours, frankly, about the failure of the media and how it affects every damn thing we do. And in this case, we're talking about Sybil Edmonds, who the media just doesn't seem to think is important, at least not the broadcast mainstream corporate media. Fellow who does apparently think it's important is my next guest here. We're going to take your calls at 877-520-1150. He's going to be with us throughout the hour. Phil Giraldi joins us. He is a former CIA counterterrorism specialist who's worked in Europe and the Middle East and an Army intelligence officer during the Vietnam War. He's currently a contributing editor for the American Conservative magazine. He writes a weekly column for antiwar.com. And during the 2008 campaign, he was a foreign policy advisor for Ron Paul. He also penned the interview last week, the cover story interview in American Conservative magazine, with former FBI translator turned whistleblower Sybil Edmonds. And Phil Giraldi joins us. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Phil.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. And thank you for giving a damn about this story, covering it. Your interview, I thought, by the way, was spectacular. You really, somehow or another, you were able to encompass the whole story. And I want to point folks over to amconmag.com, or you can go to Brad Blog and click on it there. Because you really, you helped Sybil, I think, tell the entire story of bribery, blackmail, at the highest levels of the U.S. government. Now, before I get into specific questions on that, because we're going to hit a hard break here at the bottom of the hour momentarily, so a couple of quick questions, Phil. How long were you in the CIA, and what were your duties there, essentially?
I was in for 17 years, and I was working against terrorism targets. as you said in your introduction, in Europe and the Middle East. I was an overseas operator.
And as you were working on in doing that work, were you involved with some of the things that Sybil Edmonds now alleges went on that she heard while listening to tapes as a counterintelligence translator? This whole world of spies and in this case, Turkish and Israeli spies. When she talks about her story, is it something that's familiar to you?
Well, aspects of it were familiar. For example, when I was overseas with the agency, it was common knowledge that the Turks had what was referred to as a deep government, a separate government basically made up of former officials who were very influential but were somewhat invisible. And it was also very widely known that the Israelis were very active in spying against the United States. So aspects of it were, but more so in the interview, it was a question of bringing together the concept that this was a kind of an overall espionage operation that was taking place that Sybil was talking about.
And we're going to have we'll have a lot of time to talk about those details. But is this normal? In just a few seconds here, is this normal? Is this only Turkey and Israel that have these sort of deep government operations, or is this something that the U.S. does and that all of the countries actually do?
Well, everyone spies against everyone else. I think you have to take that as a given. But the fact is that some countries that are friends with the United States and are recipients of major amounts of aid seem to be more active in spying against the U.S. than some others. So it's somewhat ironic that these people that are friendly to us are the ones that are most energetic in subverting our system.
Hold the thought. Phil Giraldi talking about Sybil Edmonds. We're going to be back with much more right after this. Brad, in welcome back. The Mike Malloy program is brought to you tonight by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring my friend, Ed Asner. Yeah, he's still my friend, even though last time we had him on the show, he told me I was full of it. That was a barbecue argument. Go to US Alone. No, that's usalone.com for info on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. All right, we're speaking with Phil Giraldi, a former 17-year CIA counterterrorism specialist, about this startling Sybil Edmonds story and his cover story in American Conservative magazine just last week that nobody other than Phil and Bradblog.com apparently are paying attention to, incredibly, although I suspect more people are paying attention to it than might admit it. Phil, we were talking before the break about the fact that it seems to be our friends here perhaps spying more than our enemies. In this case, Sybil has talked about Turkey, has talked about Israel, has talked about agents from both of these countries running this scheme, this blackmail infiltration scheme, stealing nuclear secrets. Incredible story that she had to tell to you and a few weeks earlier under oath in deposition as a former FBI translator. Now, from your experience, do you, Phil Giraldi, have any personal knowledge of the details, the things that she's talking about, the investigations, the names that she has named, these high officials and so forth? Do you have any experience with the specifics of her claim from your own years as a counterterrorism specialist at CIA?
No, I'd have to say I do not.
Okay.
Basically, I've spoken to Sybil a number of times. I've known her now for about 4 or 5 years, I find her story quite credible. Other people that have spoken to her, including two United States senators, the Justice Department Inspector General, mm-hmm. Vanity Fair Magazine, mm-hmm. 60 Minutes,
right.
You yourself.
Right.
We've all found her very credible in terms of what she's saying and the detail that she provides. But I don't have direct knowledge of this. But I would point out that everything that Sobel talks about is material that is in, if it is true, is in an FBI file. So it's not exactly like this is something that can be invented or something that can be fabricated. It's something that is based on actual files, actual investigations carried out by the FBI.
Now, that's what she says, because her information was based on wiretaps she heard from 1996 to 2002 while she was a translator in the Turkish language division. She says that all of the information is there, the FBI files. She's given the case files, the FBI file numbers. When the UK Sunday Times covered this in January of 2008, got to go overseas generally to cover the story at all, apparently. They covered it. They did three front page exclusives on it. They put out the FBI file numbers. They went to the FBI. The FBI said, oh, there is no such file. No file numbers exist. And then a document came forward that showed that file did exist. So were they lying when they said it didn't exist, or are they suggesting that perhaps this entire file has now been destroyed, Phil?
Well, that was the funny thing. It was sort of like Bill Clinton saying there is no sex with that woman. The FBI said basically the same thing. There is no file. They didn't say there was no file. So the suspicion has to be that the file was either renumbered, which is a possibility. It happens all the time in the government. Or it was destroyed, which would be a rather sad commentary. But I suspect, knowing the government, it wasn't destroyed. It was just kind of moved somewhere else.
Why would they renumber a file? What reason would there be for that, Phil?
Well, because they could actually claim that that her exposure of the number of the file was a compromise of the security of the file. So they would take it then and renumber it. I mean, I'm just guessing on that.
Right.
But it's certainly quite plausible that they would do that.
Well, the FBI, also an 18-year FBI veteran, manager of counterintelligence and counterterrorism division, John Cole, said this week, you ran this quote, his public response to your article, you ran it over at the American Conservative magazine. He said, I read the recent cover story by the American Conservative magazine. I applaud their coverage in publishing this significant interview. I am fully aware of the FBI's decade-long investigation of the high-level State Department official named in this article, Mark Grossman, which ultimately was buried and covered up. He went on to say it's long past time to investigate this case and bring about accountability. Mark Grossman was the third highest official at the State Department, at the Bush State Department, right under Colin Powell and Richard Armitage. He was a huge player in the story, as Sobel Edmonds tells it. And yet, John Cole knows about this investigation of the third highest ranking official for espionage, a decade long investigation, and then it's ultimately buried and covered up. She has said that Grossman was accepting money from the Turks, from the Israelis, was instrumental in even outing a CIA covert operation, Valerie Plame's Brewster Jennings. What reason in the world, Phil Giraldi, would there be to bury and cover up such an investigation?
Well, I think you have to look at Mark Grossman being part of a much bigger operation in terms of the Israelis and the Turks obtaining influence over our legislators and over a number of senior government officials at the Pentagon and the State Department in particular. And because this thing was so big and it affected both Democrats and Republicans, I think that the U.S. government is terrified of opening up this Pandora's box. I think that is a large part of it. And I think to a lesser extent, it's also based on the fact that it involved Israel. And of course, things with Israel are always deemed as being very sensitive. And the Justice Department routinely squashes investigations into Israeli espionage. So there are a number of different aspects to it, but it all comes together to say this story is so big that the people in Congress who should be investigating this, in the Justice Department who should be investigating it, and also in the media, because the media is tied hand and foot to government now, as I'm sure you've you've spoken about numerous times on your blog site and elsewhere. You know, this is all part of one big, you know, conspiracy, if you want to look at it that way. And essentially, this is a story that they don't want to get out.
So if it's big enough, if it's a big enough conspiracy, you know, I think of a too big to fail, when, you know, in GM and AIG and all this. If this is a, is the message here, if a foreign government can pull off a big enough conspiracy, can blackmail and bribe enough Congress members, and again, we're talking about Denny Hastert, alleged to have taken like $500,000 from Turkish operatives. Roy Blunt, still serving, he's in the Congress, Republican from Missouri, about to run for Senate. We're talking about Dan Burton from Indiana. We're talking about Tom Lantos, now deceased, Democrat from California. Stephen Solars from New York, he's no longer in Congress, and even Jan Schakowsky was named as part of this. Sabell has gone out of her way to say that she doesn't know if she did anything wrong, but she has named her as having participated, incredibly, in a lesbian affair with a Turkish agent that was videotaped by Turkish agents. She says she doesn't know if she did anything wrong, but Jan Schakowsky is the chair of the subcommittee on intelligence oversight and investigation in the U.S. House. Even if she didn't do anything wrong, she's incredibly compromised. So the notion that if you get all of these people, both Republican and Democratic, you can quash an investigation entirely just because it's so big, is that... Am I really understanding you correctly?
I think that's precisely what I'm suggesting. And the fact is that, you know, no investigation will take place anywhere in the government unless somebody says, go and do it. And that requires telling the Attorney General, telling the Justice Department to pursue the investigation and to pursue the prosecution. And if someone is saying, no, don't do it, they won't do it. And I think this is clearly a case where there is enough damage to both Democrats and Republicans that there's clearly no consensus within the government to pursue it. And I think if we had an effective mainstream media that was going after the story, that would make it come out. But we don't have an effective media. As you pointed out, this story, although it's all over the internet, the story that you and I have been covering with Sabell, as of yesterday, there were 1,500 internet websites that were covering the story, that were playing the whole interview as part of their website coverage. But nobody in the mainstream media has picked it up or even mentioned it.
Which is blows me away. But you're further suggesting, before we get to the media aspect, we're going to do that, take a break and come back and talk about the media aspect here, but you're suggesting that it's so big it had to be quashed, even though there was a 10-year investigation, according to John Cole, the 18-year FBI vet. This means to squash it. Doesn't that mean George Bush has to know about it? Doesn't that mean Barack Obama has to know about it, and they're okay with the national security implications here of foreign operatives stealing our nuclear weapons, paying money to high-ranking officials?
Well, we don't really have evidence that the presidents knew about this, but certainly their attorney generals, who were the people that they appointed to those positions to carry out, you know, the function of justice in the United States. These people had to know about it. And certainly the fact that Sabell was given two gag orders on state security issues indicates that they knew that this story was true, and they did not want this story to get out. So, you know, the question becomes, okay, fine. Barack Obama has allowed her to give a deposition recently, last month. But the fact is that she still has the gag orders, and the fact is that the federal government is not paying any attention to the story. I mean, it's quite incredible.
And we're talking about, you know, people, like I said, who are still serving in Congress, Dan Burton, Roy Blunt, Jan Schakowsky. The fact that they are okay with this is absolutely mind-boggling to me. Someone is nuts here, Phil. It's either you and I and perhaps Sabell or everyone else.
Perhaps all of us, Brad. And one thing you didn't mention is that Hastert who left, you know, being a Speaker of the House,
yes,
and was involved in all of this, is now a lobbyist for Turkey, and he's making $35,000 a month as a lobbyist for Turkey. Mark Grossman is working for a Turkish company. So, this is not just speculation. This is hard reality. These guys, if they didn't take a lot of money in a bag, and some of them did, back when they were in office or they were in positions of power, they're doing it now. They're getting their payback now.
Well, I want to know where the hell the media is on this. We're going to talk about that when we come back from this break. I also want to know, where the hell are Sybil Edmonds' FBI colleagues? Because there's a lot of other people that know about this. They don't have to. I think they should step forward, because she formed the National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. She's been out there fighting for national security whistleblowers like them. I suggest, Phil Giraldi, it's time that these guys, her colleagues, somehow either step forward publicly, or, you know, my address, my snail mail address, is on the right side of every page at Bradblog. They can send me documents. They can show that she's not crazy. They can back up, you know, she's been backing them up. It's time that they step forward, as far as I'm concerned, and back her up and show her some support. I got to take a quick break, Phil. We're going to get your comments on that in a second. And your calls at 877-520-1150. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy.
Before you call him a man, how many seas must the white dove sail?
Take a tip, button up your lip, don't get yourself unstrung.
May come
just from a slip of the tongue.
Don't talk about the weather.
It's a military secret.
Yeah, it's a secret,
just
all right.
Keep the lips together.
Problem is, the secret is being kept by the media, apparently. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, speaking with former CIA counterterrorism specialist Phil Giraldi, author of the cover story interview, the remarkable cover story interview over at American Conservative Magazine last week on Sybil Edmonds finally getting her story out for the first time to the world. And apparently the world, at least the media and the Congress, is apparently yawning, maybe because, oh, there's all kinds of them who have been apparently taking bribes, blackmails, hundreds of thousands of dollars, selling our nuclear secrets to the black market. No big damn deal, apparently. Phil, two quick questions here. Want to ask you about the FBI sources I mentioned. I think her co-workers need to come out to back her up in some way if this story is true. This remarkable story. There are ways to do it, either publicly or more covertly. These are FBI guys. They know how to do it. They know how to get the word to guys like me, guys like you. What do you think of that idea as far as her colleagues stepping forward here?
Well, I gather from Sybil that some of them have stepped forward, although obviously very few of them want to be, you know, public or to be open about it. And John Cole last week, of course, was an exception to that rule. And there have been a couple of others that Sybil has mentioned. But the fact is that there are a lot of people that know about this, and they don't want to get involved. And I think it is time for them to realize that this is a major national security issue, and it is time to talk about it. So I hope that the fact that we publicize this story will lead to some people getting in touch with us.
Well, that's right. These are folks who have been, given their lives to national security issues in the FBI and in the counterintelligence division where she worked. They need to come out. They really do, whether it's publicly, whether it's sending guys like me and you documents just to prove, to publicly verify her case. I know John Cole was able to do that. He confirmed a key element that Mark Grossman, the third highest official, was indeed under investigation. But there's other folks who were in that unit with her, who were on that specific wiretap investigation for years. They need to come forward. Now, on the media front, you spoke, or she spoke, in the interview with you at American Conservative about one of the reasons, perhaps, that the media is not coming forward. And she talked about Mark Grossman being able to fax articles over to the New York Times and have them from the State Department over to the New York Times. They slapped one of their reporters' names on it and ran it as is. She also told me that the Washington Post, they were able to do that as well, that Mark Grossman bragged about this. Is this one of the reasons why the media isn't reporting on this? Because they, as well, are compromised here?
Well, it could be. I mean, this, in a sense, is a replay of the Iraq War, where basically the media was buying into stories that were coming out and using them. But in this case, I mean, it was Grossman, according to Sibel, Grossman actually bragged that he would get the he would get from the Turks the information that they wanted to appear in an article. He would write it up and he would fax it over to the New York Times, and they would print it just as he had written it, under somebody else's byline. So this is an incredible story. We
can't expect the New York Times to write about it, can we?
Of course not. We did a little research and we kind of figured out who the journalists involved in this might be. There were one of two possibilities, but since we couldn't pin it down to an individual, and Sibel never heard his name, we didn't name anyone in the article, but we did have a pretty good idea who it was.
And I guess you don't want to name him here yet.
I say, it was one of two people.
All right. Well, let me ask you, and we got about 30 seconds left here, unfortunately, in the hour that has flown by. One of the criticisms I hear about Sibel's story is that, perhaps she only saw one part of the story, that there's a much bigger story, that this was really a secret, super secret, double whammy operation that she doesn't know about. This was all on the up and up, and she just didn't know that part of the story. Is there any possibility that that's what's going on here, Phil?
There are sting operations, and they do do that sort of thing, but you do not give nuclear secrets and defense secrets as part of that trade-off. You just don't do it.
Maybe, you wouldn't think. Maybe she did. Maybe they didn't really, but it was false information?
No, I don't believe that, because false information is quickly revealed to be false information. I don't buy that.
Phil Giraldi, thank you for your time and for your article and for sticking on this story. Check it out at amconmag.com. Unbelievable. We're going to talk to you more in the days ahead, Phil.
Thank you, Brad.
You're listening to Brad on The Molloy Show. Much more straight ahead. Program Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your friendly investigative journalist, blogger, muckraker, troublemaker, drafted into duty once again for Mike Molloy, who is in San Francisco tonight, wowing him at Yoshi's. I'm sure he will be back with you here tomorrow night, Thursday and Friday, broadcasting from San Francisco. Until then, you got me, Bradcasting from beautiful downtown Burbank, where it is now twilight and the moon rises above the city. We're taking your calls at 877-520-1150. Talking about this Sibel Edmonds story and the remarkable last hour with Phil Giraldi, former CIA operative who interviewed her. Is a story in the American Conservative magazine that nobody apparently cares about other than me and Phil, and that's about it. I will give credit, by the way, to my friend Peter B. Collins, sat in yesterday on the Tom Hartman program and interviewed Phil for a few minutes. You know, you got FBI guys coming forward saying, confirming the key element of her story, that Mark Grossman, the third highest official at the State Department under George Bush, was in fact under investigation for espionage. You got Phil Giraldi, 17-year CIA officer, saying that this story apparently is just too big for the media somehow, because, and certainly for Congress, where you got Republicans and Democrats both implicated here. well-known elected officials said to have been bribed and blackmailed and videotaped having lesbian affairs. The head of the chair of the subcommittee on intelligence oversight and investigation. Isn't that a concern? Media? The media is the problem here, frankly. And that's what we're going to talk about this hour. I will take your calls if you like on the Sabell story, 877-520-1150. Over in the bradblog.com chat room, if you go the top item over there, click here for more, and you'll be in the chat room. You can jump in there where Agent 99 is holding court. Jeannie Dean said perhaps maybe folks would pay more attention if Sabell's name, instead of Sabell Edmonds, was Sabell Acorn. Yeah, that ought to do it. Good call, Jeannie. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk about the Acorn smear and slime and garbage going out over our airwaves, over our public airwaves, at the bottom of this hour with Lori Minniti, and more media failure in the next hour with the co-editors of Project Censored's Censored 2010, the new book, in which we get an award, and I also wrote a chapter. It's all about the media failure, and when it comes to media failure, there is no greater failure to the country than Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, he's a success. He makes, a $400 million contract, something like that. He's a success as far as he's concerned, as far as his corporate paymasters are concerned, as far as America is concerned. He is a dreadful failure. He is failing this nation, and worst of all, the Democrats are allowing him to. We, the people, are allowing him to. I'm going to give you an example of that in just a second. First, let me grab some leftover calls here. Ronaldo from Riverside, California, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. What's up, Ronaldo?
Hi, how you doing, sir? Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
I just want to ask, like, where's the agent, lady that was, that made this deposition?
Yeah.
Why is she not speaking out more about this? Mm-hmm. And go ahead, sir.
Fair enough. She has been... she had been gagged by the Bush administration for about 8 years, not allowed to speak out at all about this stuff. She finally did do so under oath, August 8, 2009. You can see 3-4 hours of video, a sworn deposition at Brad Blog. You can read the transcript. You can watch the video.
Right.
She did an interview with the American Conservative, told all. How much more should she be out there?
Can I ask you a question, sir?
Yes, please.
You telling me that no government agency in this country have said, I guess they're not coward. I mean, you tell me all government agencies are so coward that it can bring this to light and prosecute anybody or whatever?
How do you explain this not coming out there? Remember, now, Giraldi had mentioned in the last hour two senators. Chuck Grassley, Republican from Iowa, and Patrick Leahy, Democrat, mm-hmm. from Vermont. Both wrote letters on her behalf to the DOJ, to the DOJ Inspector General back in 2002. The Inspector General did a report, looked at her allegations, and came out and said that they were credible, serious, and warranting investigation.
You know, what happened to that saying about, prosecute anybody, foreign or domestic? What happened to that? That just some type of... something that came from nowhere.
Came from nowhere.
Crazy.
Apparently, it is crazy, and the fact that they are not willing to protect our country, to protect our constitution, as per their oath. I'm right there with you, Ronaldo.
And you know why I called? To say something, because I'm saying that if I do something wrong, the police come and arrest me and prosecute me and try to, lose my job, lose my house, whatever. And it's like these people can just do what they want and get away with it. Nobody, no government agency, nobody will step up and say or do nothing.
That's the message.
That's why I'm burning a lot of people like myself. I want to take all your comments, and I appreciate you taking my call.
Thanks, Ronaldo. Yeah, I appreciate your thought. You're absolutely right. Your ass is going to jail if you do what these guys did. Let me get to Jim in Burbank. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Jim.
Hey, good evening.
Good evening.
I wanted to say that, most of the progressives, minds think that it's corporations controlling the media that causes a media breakdown in this country.
Yep.
I don't think it's I think it's larger than that. I think it's a mindset that the media has, and that's in not just the corporate media, but even smaller commercial media, such as even you,
even me.
Yes, in terms of framing a story, mm-hmm. and should I say, every little bit of reporting is cherry picking what you think is important to convey to others.
True. True.
And to make a buck, to be commercial about mm-hmm. it, is one of the big underlying problems with the media seeking
okay.
to entertain.
I hear you, Jim. Let me speak to that.
Yeah.
A couple of points. I said at the opening of this show that I take the responsibility of sitting down with a microphone in front of me for 3 hours damned serious. And the fact is, the reason I take it serious is because there is one industry mentioned in the U.S. Constitution. That is the press. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's the only industry given certain protections, certain dispensation, and I believe with that dispensation comes responsibility. We have a responsibility, we, the press, to talk about, to tell, to report what's going on. I take that very seriously. Now, when it comes to making a buck, I hear you. Everybody's got to make a buck. But the corporations know damn well that what they've done is done away with the competition. There is no competition in the media. It's all about five media corporations who own all the stations, who know that though progressives on the air are competitive and often beat the right wingers that are on the air, they don't put them on the big stations. They put them in the ghetto, in the media ghetto. They don't publicize them. They don't put them out there. Otherwise, Stephanie Miller would be on 400 stations instead of 40, and Laura Ingraham would be on 40 instead of 400, because Stephanie Miller beats Laura Ingraham. So it's not about money,
comment?
Man. Yeah, what's that?
Just one last comment.
Yeah, quickly.
The non-commercial radio Pacifica, which is locally is
right.
known as KPFK.
Yeah.
The fact that they are not commercial, they are only supported by the listener.
Right.
Which is listeners buying Mike's podcast, for
right.
example.
Yes.
Not his commercials, sponsors. That causes the conveyor of information, such as Mike, to basically support the listener and not support some big shot that's pulling his string that would be.
Well, I appreciate that, Jim, and I got to get to a break. Thanks
yeah.
for the call. I do appreciate it. The fact is, you know, I don't care. You know, yes, listener supported radio, fine. The fact is, the listeners don't support. They should. You know, people should be buying Mike's podcast. They should be donating to Brad Blog, progressive outlets. But the fact is, they don't. And we need, you know, to be able to compete, and we can if we're given a level playing field in the commercial market, in everyone's car, in 600 markets like Rush Limbaugh, so that we can tell the truth to counter his lies. And I'm going to give you an idea of some of those lies told just today in 15 minutes on his show when we come back after this break, and you wonder why we're not getting anywhere in this country. It's because you got liars like Rush Limbaugh who are allowed to lie time and again over your public airwaves, which I would argue, like a national park, belong to the people, need to be protected, but we're not doing that, are we? No. And the Democrats are not stepping up to do it. By the way, Barack Obama, on the day that he was inaugurated, he came out and he said that he was on his White House website that he was going to fight for media diversity. And looking at the broadcast spectrum, breaking it up, taking it out of the corporate control, guess what? By summer, that comment on the White House website was gone. And Democrats aren't talking about it. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Much more straight ahead. Yes, I can. Plenty of satisfaction. I'm going to get it. I'm going to keep talking. I'm going to keep using your public airwaves and my blog, bradblog.com, and anyone else who listened to me, Huffington Post, UK Guardian, Brad Friedman, Infor Malloy, using any and all outlets to tell the story, to tell the facts, to tell the truth that you are not hearing in the bulk of the media. I'm sorry to say, the corporate media, the corporatized media, and even in much of the blogosphere. Certainly the wingnut right-wing blogosphere, where all they do is lie, but even the progressive blogosphere ought to be telling the truth, ought to be not following PAC journalism, but talking about what is important, what Americans need to hear. No, we don't need another opinion on Phillips, what is her name? Whatever. The mamas and the papas. Okay, great story. 5 minutes. Terrific. Move on to stuff that matters. Speaking of stuff that matters, I'm going to play some clips here from Rush Limbaugh. And someone said, oh, he gets enough. I think it was Jeannie Dean said, oh, he gets enough airtime. He does. He gets way too much airtime. And to give you an idea why healthcare is having such trouble is because this kind of crap is allowed out on our airwaves. Rush Limbaugh is allowed. This is not about a debate about ideas, mind you. And yes, we ought to restore the fairness doctrine. We can call it the fair and balanced doctrine if the wingnuts prefer. But he's out there lying to the people. This is not about a policy debate. This is about lies on our own public airwaves. Here's an example. Rush today talking about the health care reform bill that they say he says that all of a sudden in the Senate they're going to pass this thing in a rush next Thursday, get it to the president's desk. He's calling it single payer, which it is not. And then here is the way he lied in 600 markets in everyone's car today.
In one move, and they're targeting next week to get this done, in one move, the U.S. Congress will take over hospitals, will take over laboratories, will take over the medical profession, will take over the insurance companies.
Okay, that is an utter lie. There is absolutely no basis for that claim that Rush Limbaugh just told to millions and millions of Americans over our airwaves. You got that? Let me play that again. Because this is amazing that he is allowed to simply lie to millions of listeners.
In one move. And they're targeting next week to get this done.
No, lie.
In one move. The U.S. Congress will take over hospitals, will take over laboratories,
lie.
Will take over the medical profession,
lie.
Will take over the insurance companies.
Lie. All a lie. It continues.
What they are plotting and hope to pull off by next week will make the takeovers of General Motors and Chrysler look like a joke.
A lie.
And once they've taken over
a lie.
The hospitals, the labs, the medical profession, the insurance companies, guess who's going to get patronage jobs in all these industries? The union people, particularly the SEIU union people.
Okay. All BS from top to bottom. This is not a policy debate. I'd love to have that policy debate. I'd love to talk about single payer. I'd love to talk about the worthy debate of whether the government should take over the hospitals, the labs, the medical profession, the insurance companies, as Rush just lied to his listeners. But he is allowed to simply lie. These aren't policy differences. Can I make this any clearer? And he targets particularly the SEI union people. That is the new target following Acorn, the old target who they have done in and Democrats have folded and allowed Acorn to be destroyed, defunded, even though they broke no laws, even though millions, billions of dollars go to actual companies that actually break laws like Halliburton and Blackwater, and these guys are allowed to continue taking money. And yet, they're doing nothing about liars like Rush Limbaugh on the airwaves. They don't get it. And those people, those Democrats, those progressives who say we should just ignore him. He gets enough airtime. No. It was ignoring him that got us to this point. He needs to be called out, and the Democrats, more importantly, need to be called out for not fighting for the people to take the people's airwaves back so that we can tell the truth in the media, so that we can tell the truth to the American public, so that we can make informed policy decisions, so that we can have a free press. Just like the Constitution calls for. That is our country, and the Democrats need to stand up and fight to take it back. And if they won't, then we got to get those Democrats out of there and replace them with someone who will. Brad, in for Malloy. Stay with us.
My God, what have we done to you?
You're going to love this. Just love it.
Hey, Truth Seekers, on the road in San Francisco tonight while my good friend Brad Friedman hosts the program. Play nice, okay? I'll see you tomorrow night.
Oh, we don't play nice around here.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Yes, I do.
I got the feeling
crank it, son.
Right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Not scared at all, but I might fall off my chair.
Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right, here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
And there is no place I would rather be, stuck in the middle with you, right here on the Mike Malloy program. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. Mike will be back tomorrow from live from San Francisco. Until then, we are broadcasting from Los Angeles at the lovely K-Talk AM 1150 studios. And I was playing those clips from Rush Limbaugh lying about healthcare, saying that next week in one move, the U.S. Congress will take over hospitals, take over laboratories, take over medical profession, take over the insurance companies. Not because I want to get into a policy debate, but because I think it needs to be shown how the fact that guys like him are allowed to lie, just blatantly lie, on our public airwaves is an absolute outrage. And it is because of that, and oh yes, millions of dollars from the corporations, that the Democrats are frightened to take anything on. Whether it be global warming, whether it be health care, whether it be accountability for presidents past who should have been impeached, whether it be torture, whether it be the Sybelle Edmonds story, on and on and on. It is about the media. And one of the one of the unbelievable failures of the media, the mainstream corporate media, not just the wingnut media, but the entire mainstream, has been this acorn nonsense that has gone on for years and years. And the media has simply been allowed to lie about it. And the reason it matters is not because Fox News and the right-wing Breitbart and Drudge were able to catch some low-level bad apple dopes at Acorn in these sting videos. The reason it matters, the reason that Acorn is targeted, is because they have been so damn effective at bringing in millions of new voters, registering new voters that happen to be low and middle income voters over the past 4, 5, 10 years. They happen to be low and middle income voters that happen to vote Democratic, and that is why the only reason they are targeted, and again, they are targeted on the media, not by legitimate criticism, but by lies. And the media has allowed it to happen. A new study out last week, and I want to thank, by the way, Rachel Maddow at MSNBC for finally getting it, finally telling the story in a now a four-part series, and we're running it over at BradBlog. But she picked up this report from two professors at Occidental College and University of Northern Iowa that just came out last week, manipulating the public agenda, why Acorn was in the news, and what the news got wrong. It's a fascinating study. It gives us hard numbers looking at the media across the board, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, and how they have simply failed to tell the real story about Acorn and the real reason that they're being targeted by Republicans, which is to keep voters from voting, legal voters from voting, because they believe that they are Democratic leaning. Joining us now to talk about that is Lorraine Maniti, an assistant professor of political science at Barnard College. Her book, Keeping Down the Black Vote, Race and the Demobilization of American Voters, it was published by the New Press in February, and another book based on a report, a landmark report that she did called The Politics of Voter Fraud, is going to be published sometime earlier next year. Lori Maniti, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Brad.
How are you?
Good.
You heard my my rant there. Am I off target? You put together, before anybody was paying attention, you put together this story in The Politics of Voter Fraud, the report. Am I off base in any of what I'm charging concerning this whole acorn sliming that's going on?
No, you're absolutely on target with it. And, excuse me, I think also that the shout out to Rachel Maddow is good too, because what she did on her show was very clearly connect this attack on Acorn to the business interests behind it and what they stand to lose. And I had picked up on that myself in the report you mentioned, in looking at a case that's now forgotten, but may have been one of the first of this type, back in 2003 in Florida, where Acorn was running a campaign to get a minimum wage raise in the state of Florida, a ballot campaign. And they hired a fellow who ended up attempting to steal some money, and they fired him. And he basically, I don't know exactly whether, you know, he did this on his own or he was sort of selected to attack Acorn, but he took his information, and Republican operatives in Florida then tried to use some information that he had against Acorn. And the bottom line of that story, and you can read about it in the report, is that they went to court, and Acorn actually won a defamation charge against this guy. So this was the kind of campaign that was the interest in Florida against the minimum wage. The restaurant industry and their lobbyists were behind this, and they have been enemies of Acorn wherever Acorn has tried to get a minimum wage raise. So I think that that connection is very important. It's not just the Republican Party, you know, sort of one-dimensional sense of who the Republican Party is. It's much bigger than that.
It's actually fighting against the things that they are against, and they're not fighting against them in the, you know, in the arena of ideas. They're playing dirty pool, and they're out there lying about them and making a completely phony case, and the media seems to continue to play along.
Yes, and I think this new report by Peter Dreyer at Occidental and Christopher Martin at the University of Northern Iowa as a journalism professor is very good in showing this. And they, you know, they write this report in an accessible way, but they use methodologies that are well accepted in academia for studying media and the behavior of the media. And they're able to make the case, I think, quite convincingly that this is a story about how the mainstream media picked up the echo chamber of the conservative media, and the failures of the mainstream media here are really, you know, it's an indictment of the mainstream media, less so, you know, sort of a rant against the conservative media. We can all do that, but this is really a kind of an indictment of looking at the mainstream media, where we expect a little more responsibility on their part. And I know this is a theme for you, and you've highlighted a number of these kinds of issues very vigorously, so we appreciate that. But and that's what this report does on the Acorn story.
Well, and you're right. We expect, and I don't call them conservative media because I don't believe they're conservative, but the right-wing media, we expect them to do this stuff. But the regular media, the real media, not the phony media, theoretically, this study, the one you mentioned, looked at 647 stories about Acorn. acorn that appeared in 15 major media organizations from 07 to 08. We're talking about USA Today, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, all the networks, PBS NewsHour, NPR, and so forth. And here's just some of the things they found. 82.8% of the stories alleging voter fraud failed to mention that actual voter fraud is extremely rare. You covered this in your report, Politics of Voter Fraud. Give us an idea, Lori, how rare it is.
Well, I'll tell you what I did, and I think some people, might want to quarrel with me about my methods, but I looked at this as a kind of trying to track a crime.
Uh-huh.
And so I turned, and I'm an, you know, I'm an empiricist. I believe in sort of positive science, meaning
right.
I'm looking for data, I'm looking for evidence all the time. And so where to look for this would, you know, first sort of think about it as a kind of crime. Well, the data on it are going to be generated by the law enforcement against it. And so I looked at prosecutions and indictments and convictions. I looked through that kind of data, but I went well beyond that as well to document, because I wasn't finding it mm-hmm. in that data. And so to give you a sense, I looked at a data set that contains every indictment brought in federal court in the United States and at all levels of federal court.
Right.
Every indictment, not even something going forward with a conviction, but an indictment.
Uh-huh.
So thousands every year.
Right.
And did a very sort of complex analysis of this data over a 10-year period from, I think it was 1996 to 2006. And on an annual basis, I concluded that there was something like about 8 cases a year in indictments, not in convictions. And this is at the federal level, where the federal government has resources to prosecute this. And we all know that in recent years, the Bush administration has made this a major initiative.
Unprecedented resources
yes.
they put into this voter
yes.
fraud stuff.
Yes. So, so those who want to criticize and say, well, law enforcement they don't enforce the law, they don't go after people, therefore they don't produce the data, and that's why you're not finding it.
Yeah.
I think that really has to be defended, and it can't be defended, certainly in recent years when we've seen these. In fact, you can go to the Department of Justice website, you can look at the public integrity sections page on the mm-hmm. website, I believe you can download it, the handbook that is produced by the Justice Department for every U.S. attorney in the United States. This is a handbook on election crimes and
right.
how to prosecute them and
right.
how to put the case together. And you'll see in that handbook that they're still claiming that this issue of fraud in elections is a major priority for the Justice Department. And we know at the FBI as well. So we'll take them at their word.
So there ought to be tons and tons of not just indictments, but convictions.
Yes.
And there ain't. And and of course, your numbers don't even include someone we know with, for a fact, committed voter fraud in Florida, and perhaps even in Connecticut, as we're learning, one woman by the name of Ann Coulter.
Yes.
That said, we're speaking with Lori Minniti, much more on this acorn hit job and why it's going on here on The Mike Malloy Show. Enough lies in the media. and not enough people out there correcting them. Because who? What? The corporations. Yes, they own the media. The Republicans, they own the media. And the Democrats, they own no spine to stand up and tell the truth. So we are applauding Rachel Maddow over at MSNBC for fighting back finally on this Acorn story that I know I've been reporting at Brad Blog for years. And Lori Menniti has been trying to do the same, assistant professor at Barnard College. Her report, The Politics of Voter Fraud, I've long recommended as a must-read, and it will now be a book coming out next year. And she covers our old friend, I think, Thor Hearn, the American Center for Voting Rights. Oh, I got to get her on there. There we go. Lori, does does the Brad Blog get mentioned in your upcoming book?
Yes, it does. I think you deserve a lot of credit for being on that story about the American Center for Voting Rights, and really the first one to break that story, and then you stuck with it for a long time and produced a lot of information that everybody else picked up on.
And, well, and people didn't, well, yeah, not enough people.
Some people.
Right. Well, if people didn't understand as that was emerging, you know, what a theme that was, what it would continue to be, it eventually showed itself, this whole phony voter fraud scam that the GOP was running showed itself to be at the heart of the U.S. attorney purge. This is about electoral politics, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I think the Democrats continue to bring a knife to a gunfight on this one.
Yeah, I mean, the way I think about it, Brad, you know, this is really, it's even worse than that. It's sort of, you know, what's left of the Republican right is really going after working people and democracy. Mm-hmm. That's what they're going after.
Yeah.
They're past the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is a vehicle, and it's sort of the best thing we have in electoral politics for representing those interests. But, you know, the transformation of the Democratic Party over the last 50 years is really remarkable. But it is not there yet, and it cannot necessarily be relied upon to represent the interests of the people who are now the targets, again, of the Republican right wing.
Yeah, you're right. In one sense, these attacks on Acorn, now on SEIU, I played Rush Limbaugh attacking SEIU in the last previous half hour. They're sort of saying, forget about the Democrats. Let's just go now to the people, to the organizers,
right,
to the people who are fighting for the policy, who are making a difference. And, Lori, I hate to keep banging the same drum, but until it gets out into the media, until somehow or another the truth can make its way onto our corporate airwaves, you know, we got to repeat this study that just came out, you know, on the why Acorn was in the news and what the news got wrong. Took a look at these major media organizations, and 80% of the stories that alleged involvement in voter fraud failed to mention that Acorn was the one reporting the registration irregularities to the authorities in the first place, as they're required to by law. We're talking about CNN, New York Times, guys.
It's actually quite, in some ways, it's stunning. I don't know if it's just laziness or if it's the thrill of participating in mob action, because, you know, what I call this attack on Acorn, I call it a low-tech lynching. And it's low-tech because they're using tactics that have been around for a very long time. They're using red baiting. They're using racism. They're using the sort of right-wing populist call to the streets.
And it's working. It's working, Lori.
It's working. And, you know, it really is. It is scary. It's a kind of lynching.
Yep.
You know, because it's a kind of punishment meted out by a mob.
But
it's premeditated.
High tech when it makes its way onto the airwaves, when it's done by the media themselves, and when the Democrats are afraid to stand up to it, and they even defund these organizations. They fall for it.
They do, because they have benefited from what ACORN has done recently with respect to voter registration, no question. We've looked at the turnout numbers and the turnout data, and that stuff is still coming out, and we're sort of analyzing it. There's no question. African Americans and Latinos, millions more voted in 2008 than in 2004. The story gets a little bit lost because the turnout, overall turnout, did not go up that much, surprisingly. But what you had was a little bit of a fall off on the part of supporters of the Republicans, but you had a surge among groups that are smaller portions of the electorate, African Americans and Latinos, and you had it in concentrated areas where it made a difference. So,
Lori, yes. I got to get out.
Okay.
Lori Maniti of Barnard College, The Politics of Voter Fraud. Read the report. Wait for next year's book. Fighting the Good Fight. Thank you, Lori, for all you've been doing for so long.
Sure. And Brad, one quick thing. John Atlas has a new book coming out called Seeds of Hope on ACORN, and people can kind of get the real story from that book.
Rock and roll. Thanks, Lori. Appreciate it. Brad O'Malloy, much more right after this. Calm down here. Trying to calm down. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Yes, it is I, Truth Seekers. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, your friendly citizen investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, drafted into duty as Mike is in Sam Clam's Disco tonight, having a lovely personal appearance up there in cooperation with our affiliate, the great Green 960 in the Bay Area. He will be back and broadcasting tomorrow from San Francisco, as I understand it, on Thursday and Friday. Until then, it is I, Brad Friedman, broadcasting to you, Truth Seekers, from beautiful downtown Burbank, where the sun has set, and after the last 2 hours of ranting and raving, I'll try to calm down. No promises. We're going to have shortly joining us. We've been talking all night about the media, the failure of the media, the failure of the Democrats to do anything about it, to take the media back, to take our public airwaves back, to protect them, to guarantee freedom of the press, as we find in this little document called the Constitution. Quaint though it is, I take it damn seriously. And so to that end, we're going to be talking with Peter Phillips and Mickey Huff shortly, the co-editors of Project Censored's new Censored 2010. Just out today, we're going to talk about some of the Project Censored awards this year. Your humble blogger, I'm told, has received one. But before that, I want to check in with my colleague over at velvetrevolution.us, an organization that was co-founded by the Brad Blog. So full disclosure there. They've launched a new campaign which is near and dear to my heart. Emily Levy is representing Velvet Revolution. She is a longtime election rights, voting rights advocate out here in California. It's a damned important campaign as far as I'm concerned. Here's what all you'll need to remember for a start. Diebold, returnourmoney.com. Emily, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Thanks, Brad.
What is DieboldReturnOurMoney.com?
Well, it's a new campaign, as you said, that's launched by Velvet Revolution, and we've got a bunch of partner organizations, too, just launching this week, calling on Diebold to give back over $100 million in California taxpayer money that's been paid for them for their voting systems, which have turned out to be faulty and failed in just about every way possible, including some newly discovered this year flaws in their systems that should have resulted in their federal certification never have been granted to them. But in fact, they did get that certification, partly because the process is so bogus. And in fact, Diebold knew about some of these flaws that delete ballots from the voting machines without notice and allow the...
Hang on, let me just repeat that. Let me pull a Huelhauser here.
Okay.
Delete ballots without notice? What? Will you repeat that for us? They actually... drop ballots without telling the system administrator. They just disappear them from the election results, correct?
That's right. And in fact, last fall, there was in Humboldt County, California, where Eureka and Arcata are, there was a group of election integrity advocates who were doing a pilot project where they were actually scanning all the ballots to post them online so that anybody who wanted to could count the votes and check the official results. And in that process, which was undertaken in partnership with their local county election official,
right,
they discovered that there was an anomaly. There was a discrepancy between the official vote count and the vote count that they were getting.
Mm-hmm.
And in investigating that, they discovered that an entire deck or batch of ballots had been deleted. And this is a flaw that Diebold knew about and had done virtually nothing to tell anybody about. They'd sent an email to the counties that used the system in question, the version of the software that
years ago, four years ago, they said, hey,
right,
be careful of this problem. Now, the Secretary of State of California, Deborah Bowen, jumped in. And we should add, though this campaign focuses on California, these machines, these tabulators, are currently used in 34 states, if I recall, around the country that have this flaw that we're discussing and other flaws like it. Because California Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen, she did a study after this came out in Humboldt County and found that you could go in to the tabulator and with a click of a button, without even having a confirmation, yes, no, with a click of a button, you could delete all of the audit logs that are supposedly there to track electronically anytime anybody goes into the system.
Required to be permanent, that's right.
Required by the federal voting system standards. These machines, whether they're touchscreen machines, whether they're op-scan machines, they fail on point after point. Bowen had to decertify one of the versions of this, but other versions that have some of these same problems are still being used in California. So, and in 34 states. So the Diebold ReturnOurMoney.com campaign, which we ask people to go and sign on to, it'll send a letter to three different parties asking for three different things. Tell us, Emily Levy, real quickly, what the three planks of this campaign are.
So the first one is to Diebold itself, and it will actually go directly to a couple of email addresses at Diebold, including that of Chris Rigall, which is his real name,
Rigall.
Believe it or not.
Yeah, I know.
Demanding that they return California's money. It will go to Secretary of State Deborah Bowen, who we're calling on to decertify Diebold. Diebold has been decertified and recertified a number of times in the state, and at this point we are saying we're done with them, kick them out of the state forever. And then the third addressee is Attorney General Jerry Brown of the state of California, who we're calling on to prosecute Diebold, to investigate the possibility of filing suit against them for breach of contract and fraud should they not return California's money in 90 days. This is taxpayer money. California is in desperate straits right now. We cannot abide a company taking over $100 million of our taxpayer money that we need for our parks, we need for health services for families, we need for
California,
for people with disabilities that are having their assistance cut back. There are tons of things that we need this money for, and it's just intolerable.
California is facing a huge budget shortfall, billions of dollars. I know other states are as well. And yet, you know, I compare this to the AIG thing, where they were given millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars in that case, and basically did any damn thing they wanted with it. Did not deliver to the taxpayers what they need, what we had asked for, and instead they delivered fraud. And so we want $100 million back from Diebold.
Well, $100 million is really the figure that we're using because it's what we were able to document had been spent.
Mm-hmm.
Because the money has been spent by the state, by counties, at different times for different things, all involved in the Diebold system, and we weren't able to get a hard figure of exactly how much it is, so we're saying we want it all back. We know it's over $100 million.
It's over $100 million. Okay, one, that's what we want from Diebold, to return our money. Two, Deborah Bowen has decertified one version of this software, but incredibly, she has allowed allowed for the moment these, and she's up for re-election, so hopefully she takes notice here, these same products are still being used, in other versions of it, in other counties around the state. She needs to decertify all Diebold voting systems in California.
And Jerry Brown to go after whatever he can do, whether it's a breach of contract case, a criminal investigation.
Mm-hmm. He's the Attorney General. He's maybe running for governor. He needs to investigate and prosecute these guys. Enough is enough.
That's right. And now I want to talk about what we're asking the listeners to do, which is to go to DieboldReturnOurMoney.com and send an email from there to Diebold, to Deborah Bowen, and to Jerry Brown. It's one email that goes to all three of them. If you're on Twitter, you can follow us at VR_tweet. If you're on Facebook, search for Velvet Revolution, and there's links on our fan page. You can become a fan of Velvet Revolution in general, and then there's links to our causes and other fan pages that we've got for each of our campaigns that we're doing right now.
Smart.
This is only one of our campaigns.
Indeed. Smartly done. You can get straight there, DieboldReturnOurMoney.com, and all of those emails, you've made it real easy to just click a button, send it out to all of them, saying you join with us in saying enough is enough. Let's have some real action here. Unfortunately, this is one of those points that the media has not been covering. I was happy to see Emily Plain Dealer covered it in Ohio, because right now Diebold is being sold to ESNS, the largest voting machine company in the world. They've purchased the entire voting division, election division at Diebold, which means that ESNS will now control something like 75% to 80% of our votes, every vote in the U.S., unless ESNS is stopped from having this election monopoly. So they picked up the story at Plain Dealer because Diebold is an Ohio company, and they talked about our campaign. But, you know, folks need to understand they need to participate in their democracy. They can't participate in their democracy if their votes are just, their ballots are deleted by these crazy e-voting systems that don't work.
That's right, and we're starting this campaign with Diebold, and we're starting in California, but we'd really like to see it expand to the other electronic voting system vendors and to other states. And if people are interested in working on that with us, they can contact us through the velvetrevolution.us website. We'd be happy to work with folks to expand the campaign.
It's about people, not the corporations. Thank you, Emily Levy of velvetrevolution.us. The campaign is DieboldReturnOurMoney.com. Project Censored coming up right after this. To the Malloy program, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, in for Mike, who's in San Francisco. He will be back tomorrow, never fear, truth seekers. Let's see, we've been beaten up on the media all night. We've been beaten up on the fact that Democrats don't stand up and fight for your public airwaves. Well, somebody who has been fighting for the public airwaves and to get the truth out for, a whole bunch of years, going on 30 now, I think, are the folks over at Project Censored, projectcensored.org. And their new book, Censored 2010, is out today. Censored 2010, the top 25 censored stories of 2008 and 2009. We've got a link to it at the top of Brad Blog, where you can buy the book, where you can support independent media and support those folks out there who have been telling the stories, trying to tell the stories in the media that have been ignored. Joining us right now are the co-editors of that project, Peter Phillips, a professor of sociology at Sonoma State University and president of the Media Freedom Foundation. He is one of the co-editors, and let's actually go through this one at a time so we know whose voice is who. Peter, welcome to the Mike Malloy program.
Hi, Brad. Good to talk to you.
Great to have you here finally. And let me get Mickey in here. Mickey Huff is an associate professor of history at Diablo Valley College. He's also on the executive committee of the Media Freedom Foundation. Mickey, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Brad. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. Where's Diablo Valley, Mickey?
Just outside of Berkeley, California.
Ah.
So Bay Area.
Bay Area. Okay. And Peter, you're up in the Bay Area as well, are you not?
North Bay, up by Santa Rosa.
All right. Well, congratulations on the new book. I have to give a full disclosure here in that apparently I'm one of the Project Censored Award winners this year, but also I contributed, you asked me, and I was honored to contribute a chapter to your book on the, what was it on again, Peter?
Election 2008, Vanishing Votes, Disappearing Democracy,
what?
And Media Misdirection.
What? I hadn't heard. Really? Hadn't read about it. Well, yeah, and I covered it in a chapter in the book, which I had really a difficult time getting down to a single chapter with so much that went on and that was just not covered out there in the media. And let's get the other thing out of the way here. I was awarded one of these Project Censored Award for, in part, for my coverage of. Well, let's let Mickey explain this particular one. Do you remember which one it was, Mick?
Story number 12 this year.
Yes.
I believe that would be the mysterious death of Mike McConnell, Karl Rove's election thief.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and you were in great company with Mark Crispin Miller and some others at the Ross Story.
Larissa Alexandrovna over there.
Yeah, and Muriel Kane.
Yep.
And you all just did a bang-up job on a story that is connected in many ways to, well, the things that you've been writing about and talking about for years now. And you, in fact, even did an update for us, which was fabulous.
Which people can get to at projectcensored.org. We've got a minute here before the break, and we're going to keep you guys on for the rest of the hour. But let me add, and we'll try to take some calls if I can fit them in, at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Let's try this with Peter, since this is, I think, your 14th year working on this book. 13th year. Okay. This goes back to 78 they've been putting out?
76. 76? Carl Jensen's first year. That was, he was the founder of Project Censored. He did it for 20. I've done it for 13. Now Dr. Ben Frymer is taking over as director of Project Censored up here at Sonoma State.
So media failure to cover stories that are important, and we're going to go through what some of those stories are in a second, frankly, is nothing new. In truth, it's been going on since at least 1976, if not longer. There's been a need for Project Censored to report on what you're not hearing about. We're going to talk about some of those stories, but Mickey, well, actually, Peter, real quick before we go to a break here, is the problem getting better or worse over these last years?
It's far worse. We've gone, in the time the Project Censored's been around, we've gone from 50 major media corporations down to 10. And they dominate the news. They're in the entertainment business, not the informing business. And they literally are propagandizing us with public relation firms' spin from government corporations.
We're going to even the score a little bit right after this break. Brad Friedman in for Malloy on Project Censored with the co-editors Peter Phillips and Mickey Huff. Stick with us. More after this. Seekers on the road in San Francisco tonight while my good friend Brad Friedman hosts the program. Play nice, okay? I'll see you tomorrow night. No, no, no. No playing nice, Mike. We're tearing up the joint. Brad in for Mike. We're speaking with the co-editors of Project Censored, Peter Phillips and Mickey Huff. co-editors of Censored 2010, the top 25 censored stories of 2008 and 2009. And we will take your calls if I can fit them in at 877-520-1150. The Mike Malloy Program brought to you tonight by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner, my good buddy. Go to, he's my homie, he's from Missouri. Go to usalone.com for info on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area, usalone.com. All right, back to Peter and Mickey concerning Censored 2010. Let's hit a couple of the... Oops, did I do this right? I'll figure it out. I want to go through with you guys a couple of your favorite stories from among the top 25 censored stories of 2008 and 2009. What, before we hit them, though, Mickey Huff, what makes a censored story, essentially?
Well, that's a great question, because there has been some confusion of it over the years, and actually some criticism of the project. And censorship, modern media censorship, is any act, anything that interferes with the free flow of information in our society. I mean, free flow of information is the life's blood of our democracy. I don't want to get, you know, too hokey or cliched and, you know, go back and source some of the founders here.
Hey, I've been there with you all night long, brother. Don't worry. Go for it.
You know what I mean? But, you know, I mean, these folks knew, I mean, for all their faults and, you know, their edifices and so on they had going on, the problem here is that there are many factors afoot that are akin to censorship that are not simply outright omission. I mean, that's when people hear censorship, they hear the big hand cuts the story. They hear blackout. Now, granted, some of the things we've done are literally blacked out. I mean, there's no coverage in corporate media whatsoever. But other problems that we see where corporate media may dabble with some stories are problems of framing, labeling, attacking, where they have an avoidance of really going through and asking follow-up questions on things. So our definition of censorship, which you can see at projectcensored.org, and you can also see in the books, is anything that interferes with the free flow of information and anything other than getting out all the known facts and transparency and sourcing. And this is something actually that we call the end result of this kind of journalism is validated independent news.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the business of collecting validated independent news, and we're doing that now not just through the Project Censored website and through the annual books, but we're doing it through Media Freedom International and our Project Censored affiliate program, where we're having universities and colleges get involved in this vetting of information process. Because as Peter said rightly in the introduction, corporations are not in the business of producing accurate information. They produce pro-profit propaganda for their stockholders, and they produce things that mislead the public so that they can get away with murder.
And we should say, and sometimes murder is the real end result here, but we should say that Project Censored is in conjunction with the faculty and students at Sonoma State University. It has been for, what did I already say, 28 years?
34 years.
30 how many?
34.
34 years, okay. Peter Phillips, you said before the break that over the past 34 years, the case has gotten worse as we've had fewer and fewer media organizations out there actually controlling all the news. You responded in this book. This is your last year, I think, working on the yearbook, the Censored 2010, to some of the folks who have been critical of Project Censored over the years. And I can't tell if the response here was somewhat satirical or if you meant it. Do you want to give me an idea? Do you know what I'm referring to here?
Well, we did a whole special chapter kind of addressing the question that we've been criticized in print. Are we a left-leaning, conspiracy-oriented organization?
Uh-huh.
And the answer is absolutely not. And we spent a good 30 pages explaining that. But what we did in particular was go back and analyze the kinds of stories that we did during the Clinton administration and the kinds of stories we did with the Bush administration, because we were often accused of attacking Bush.
Uh-huh.
And what we're doing is stories about the powerful. And so whether it's Clinton or Bush, we find parallel stories all the way through, starting wars, lying about the enemy, you know, cutbacks in social services, a variety of things, building empire, so to speak, in both administrations. And what the Fourth Estate, what media is about, is exposing what the powerful are doing, being transparent about who the winners and losers are in the decision-making processes in government and the highest levels of corporations. And that's an ongoing task that we need to address in a broad way, and corporate media is not doing it. So this year we've got 9 universities participating in this project. Mm. And we hope to expand that to hundreds worldwide that are looking at the and validating independent news stories, like stuff that you do at Brad's blog, that needs a lot of people in the country. They're not sure who to trust on the internet. So as we validate stories from the internet, and universities engage in that practice, people can start to learn who to trust and where to go for news besides the corporate top-down media.
Yeah, I love this quote you have in here, Peter. Why stories about the powerful in government and big business are left-leaning is beyond our understanding. They sort of indict themselves, don't they, when they say that, oh, these stories about big business and government, in going after those stories as left-leaning, they sort of indict themselves.
Exactly.
It seems
to me.
It's
not any more left-leaning than it's right-leaning or middle of the road. I mean, it's just good journalism.
All right, let's talk about some of this good journalism. Mickey Huff, do you have, we'll sort of go back and forth here between the two of you. Do you have a favorite top censored story of 2008 and 2009 that you want to pull out here?
Well, let me see. It's real hard to pick a favorite because they're all doozies.
They're all huge. Yeah, they really are.
As you know, we get well over, we get 150, we get 200 stories. I mean, that's another reason we're getting into the validated independent news process. Mm-hmm. People say, man, you could just put these up online all year round, and that's what we're going to be doing when we're vetting these stories and validating the accuracy of these things. Exactly. We're doing what the corporate media won't do.
Well, then, if not a favorite, give us an idea of one that jumps out at you that, we can let people know that has been censored.
Absolutely. In fact, if you really look at the top 25 stories, and you can see them for free online at projectcensored.org on the link to the right,
mm-hmm.
the top 25 censored stories for 2010, stories number 1, 6, 8, 14, 19 all deal with some kind of Wall Street bank corruption, the Fed basically owning Congress, the influence of money and the rank corruption of Congress.
Uh-huh.
And I know Peter might want to talk about some of these, but just one of the stories that really stood out to me is staggering as we were doing the research on it. And I mean, I had to rub my eyes, and really think about what this meant, is that lobbyists spent, according to the Center for Responsive Politics, $32,000 per legislator per day. For every day the Congress is in session. I mean, this is what the public is up against in the so-called democracy. There's no way that the voice of common people can be heard through this fog of money that mm-hmm. just blurs everything that's going on. And I mean, those thematic stories, those 5 or 6 stories in a row. I mean, whether it's Congress invested in defense contracts where they're clearly benefiting from this, follow the $1 million a day in the healthcare lobbyists, the money that the pharmaceutical companies and the insurance companies are loading into this debate, and why the public option and single payer is off the table. It's a no-brainer why it's off the table. It's because they want to protect the status quo and they want to keep the money, and the corporate media is in the business of protecting stockholders and keeping the money.
And the corporate media has a very difficult time reporting on how the corporate media wants to continue the status quo that way. That's one of the problems that we run into. How are they going to out themselves,
they're not gonna
so
do
to speak?
Any of that. Exactly. They're not going to do any of that.
Peter Phillips, any stories jump out to you as the most notably censored this year?
Well, certainly the number one story, and Mickey alluded to this, but, this is Congress sells out to Wall Street. And that's got to be a theme this year of the mm-hmm. amounts of the millions and millions of dollars that flow into the Beltway in Washington, D.C. We know in particular now that the investment firms, Bear Stearns, Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, AIG, Fannie Mae, they contributed since 2001 $64 million to congressional candidates, presidential candidates, both parties. Obama and McCain each received a total of $3.1 million. These are the folks that got the $700 billion in the bailouts. And they specifically gave money to the committees on banking, housing, urban affairs, and the finance committees in both the House and the Senate. The committee members alone received $5 million just in the 2007-08 election cycle from these the people who got the bailout money. So, I mean, money's greasing the palms there in a big way.
Yeah, go ahead.
And so, I mean, that's just, it's shocking to us to see it all happen. And then, of course, with the financial collapse and how that's behind that, and how they how the Congress opened the doors for this to happen, allowing these banks to invest in these subprime bundled mortgages and derivatives and this sort of thing that has hurt everybody in this country. We got to pull the covers off of this in a much bigger way than just, you know, having a censored book. I mean, everybody in the country should be talking about this and being aware of it and being politically active around this corruption.
They should. You know, as I'm browsing this list, and even just browsing the list, number two, U.S. schools are more segregated today than in the 1950s. Nuclear waste pools in North Carolina. Obama's military appointments have corrupt past. I mean, these are stories that, and I'm glad you've got follow-ups on them at the website, as well as I think you've got links to the various stories, and they're certainly in the book, Project Censored. I don't know what we do if we don't get out, if we don't somehow improve the media as things are getting worse, as you say, rather than better. Real quickly here, and then we're going to have to move on, unfortunately, because we're coming up against the end of the hour. Well, let me give one more story from each of you. Mickey Huff, let's go to you. One more story that you want to make sure that people hear about this year.
Another story that, you know, really just should be, again, a no-brainer, should be something that's part of open dialogue, but it won't be because it's clearly part of the propaganda campaign to dupe the American public into believing they have a choice about politics and political parties, and that's story number 20 this year, secret control of presidential debates.
Yes.
You know, that's just a doozy. I mean, and this goes back to the 80s, the Reagan years. I mean, that's, again, the thing with a lot of these stories is they're not just now. You know, like the number one story goes back to the Phil Graham and the Clinton years and the repeal of Glass-Steagall. Mm-hmm. And this, I mean, so the blame goes all around. And both these parties are in on this, and they're both lying in their pockets, as you can see some of the great biting cartoons from Khalil Ben-Deeb again this year in the book. I mean, they're just spot on. And this story in particular goes back to the secret deals between private corporations made between Republican and Democratic Party that control the debates.
And to continue that duopoly, Peter Phillips, and let me get, just because we're short on time, Peter, one other one jump out for you.
Well, I studied power elite, so Obama's Trilateral Commission team is amazing to me. There's only like 400 people in the Trilateral Commission, only 80 Americans. This is the world, one of the world planning bodies of elite corporate headquarters all over the world, trying to encourage capital growth and expansion to their own self-interests. And Obama picked 11 people from the 80 in the United States who all know each other. Basically, they're in the State Department, the Treasury, the Ambassador to the UN, National Security Advisor, all from this one small group of people in the Trilateral Commission. That kind of networking, that kind of insider deals, and predetermined policies is not democracy.
Oh, you're so left-leaning, Peter. Before I let you guys go here, Cosimo in the Brad Blog chat room says, what? No Sibel? Has she made the list in the past years? They're asking, of course, about Sibel Edmonds. We've been talking about that quite a lot tonight. Boy, it seems to me like that is really the mother of all censored stories, as far as I can tell. Has she been in here before, or is that you think she might show up in future editions?
We may see her coming up ahead. I know you've been covering what she's been doing. She was quiet for a long time. And so we're really looking to see what's going to come out of that.
Boy, oh boy, I hope you do, because that seems to be the mother of censored stories. Where the hell is the media? Excuse me. Peter Phillips, Mickey Huff, I want to thanks for joining me. I want to congratulate you on today's release of the book Censored 2010, the top 25 censored stories of 2008-2009 from Sonoma in cooperation with Sonoma State University. You can go to projectcensored.org. You can go to bradblog.com where we've got a link to the book. Buy the book. Support these folks. Yes, I have written a chapter for it, but I get no money from it. I just want the news, the stories, the real story to get out. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us tonight.
Thanks very much, Brad.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck, guys. All right, we're coming back to close it up. We've got a couple of folks hanging on the line, been hanging on for a long time, and I'm going to try to run through those lines and get back. Yeah, don't look at me that way, Tony. Yeah, I know. We're going to come back. We're going to come back to them. We're going to get everybody in. We're going to say thanks to everybody, and everything will be okay. Man. So you see how the media works, folks? You see how it doesn't work, folks? You see how, you know, we're stuck on a few dozen stations out there while the liars are out all over the nation in every car telling you what doesn't matter? Pay attention to the folks out there who are telling you what does matter. Project Censored is one of them. Certainly, Mr. Malloy is doing so every night. I'm trying to, but we need your support. Starting to sound like a fundraising. We're not trying to fundraise here, although some support would be nice for all of us. That said, we got to yell and scream and make noise and hold some feet to the fire to change this situation. Much more right after this.
To fill the air with
there, Tone. I like it. My thanks tonight to my engineer, rock and roll, Tony Sorrentino. Thank you, brother. Great job as ever. Producer and phones, Desi Doyen out there. Ben Birch over at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Agent 99 for manning the BradBlog.com chat room. Thanks also to KTalk AM 1150 for hosting me here in the lovely Stephanie Miller Studios. And, of course, Mike and Kathy Malloy for allowing me to sit in. For those listening on MikeMalloy.com, stay tuned for Head On with Bob Kincaid. Let me see if I can clear out these calls that they've been holding all night. Sorry, we have not been able to get to so many folks. Steven in Burbank.
Hi, Brad.
How are you? You got about 15 seconds. I'm sorry.
Before the collapse of the Soviet Union, there were many articles speculating and predicting about what would replace it as the Big Bang Boogeyman.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know what those articles are, if somebody could publish a book, you know, because I know I saw them. I know that I maybe see some in the LA Times, you know, and here's what they were predicting, and here's exactly what happened. You can see it, rogue terrorist states, you know, terrorism, rogue states, blah, blah, with that. Get to the next call, dude. We'll talk later, okay?
Thanks, Steve. Okay. Have a good night.
Uh-huh.
Robert in San Francisco, you got about 15 or 20 seconds.
Molloy's having a beautiful time. It's wonderful weather in San Francisco.
Why aren't you up there seeing him tonight, Robert?
I got off work too late.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, all you right. Got to scrounge for every buck you can get nowadays. But you know, the thing is that this election campaign finance reform and verifiable ballot trail seems to be the two real pressing issues that we need to get a hold of. This health care thing, I don't think it's going to come out the way it really should come out until the congressional members aren't held hostage by big bucks.
I hear you. You're right.
It's a system that we've allowed to get this way, and the people inside it, I don't think, are going to change it. We're going to have to do it.
Thanks, Robert. I agree. Get the money out of the campaigns, and we don't need a verifiable trail. We need paper ballots, and we need to actually count them. All right, I've enjoyed myself. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, America. Thanks, DU and Brad Blog. Keep it lit. We'll see you on the blog. Have a good night.